I'm Tiffany Lopez, and you're listening to Posh Incredible Podcast, where I interview ordinary people who are making extraordinary transformations in their lives and for others. I believe we're all here to transcend and assist the ones around us to grow into the people they were born to be. The pathway of awakening is a noble life pursuit, and it starts now. This is T's True Podcast Story, Outpost Cold Brew, where you get the lowdown on what actually happened to LA's most beloved cold brew coffee brand. Garrett and Guy conduct the interview. They are UCLA MBA students working on their end of year thesis, a business plan for cold brew coffee. They asked to interview me to gain insights about product viability, consumer behavior, next steps, what they can expect from starting a cold brew coffee brand, and they ask what happened to Outpost. Get ready for some juicy information about the beverage industry and some never-before-heard information about the best cold brew 2014 had to offer. Of course, I'm a little biased. All right. Hi, guys. This is Tiffany, and we're recording. Actually, it's going to be a reverse interview style. So I have Gareth and Guy, and they're... Why don't you guys intro yourselves just for a sec? What are you guys doing? What are you working on? Why do you need info from me?
Absolutely. I'll kick it off. So I'm Gareth. I met Guy in my second year at UCLA Anderson. We're doing our MBA, and as part of our MBA, we have to create a business plan to create our own business. And we've been going ahead. We met with Guy and a team of three other guys, so there's five of us total, and we've been kicking around ideas, and we actually settled on the idea of cold brew coffee. We saw a lot of growth in the market, and it's a pretty interesting idea of a company that we could actually start together. It doesn't require a ton of capital, and we see this as something we'd start together in business school. So we've been looking at local cold brew companies in Los Angeles. I believe I came across yours from a LA Times article, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and we're both very interested in entrepreneurship. We plan on starting our own businesses sometime in the very near future. So we wanted to reach out to you and learn more about entrepreneurship, starting your cold brew coffee company, and kind of seeing what you learned from that.
Yeah, that's about it. And I'm Guy. I'm originally from Brazil. Moved to US about a year and a half ago to do my master's and essentially to start a business. And then we got together, Gareth and I, and a couple of three other friends. And we are exploring new ideas. Cold brew is kind of a passion. And we are here to learn more about your path. How was your journey in the cold brew space and in entrepreneurship in general? And try to get as much information as possible to help us in the future.
Have you guys done any, anything in entrepreneurship?
Yes.
So you've started businesses or, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so actually, when I was maybe like 12 years old, my father and I started a chicken coop company, Wine Country Coops. There's the shameless plug. And we built chicken coops, all throughout high school. And when I was in college, I helped run it with my father, and we built maybe 75 chicken coops total, high-end chicken coops, and we sold them to, local people in the Bay Area. And we were actually able to fund a lot of my college education with that. After that, I went the corporate route and worked for some big corporations. And that's one of the things that drew me to business school, is I wanted to get back into entrepreneurship, move back to California, and kind of reestablish myself here.
Okay. And yes, I've been involved with entrepreneurship for a while. I started my first company when I was 21 years old in Brazil with a partner. The idea behind it was make people's dream come true. So if when play guitar with Paul McCartney, or maybe play tennis against Pete Sampras, these kind of things. So that's what I've done for over 7 years now. Later, I joined my family business. It's a textile company, trying to turn it around. Was founded by my grandfather, was not doing well. So I joined my mother for a while, and for 3 years I was helping to run the business. And then when that project was over and Jazzside, my initial company, was doing well, it was time to come to the US, learn more about business here, and try to start a company in this intersection of Brazil and US or something in the West Coast. So that was the idea.
So this is super interesting to me because you both have a real world experience that's like school in itself. So why go and get an MBA in entrepreneurship? It sounds like you guys already have one.
I would agree with that to a certain point. But for me, you know, I started my own business when I was in college, and you know, it was more of a side hustle than a real business. It wasn't anything as legit as Guy's business. And then I went the corporate route, and I was working in New Orleans, which I love. It's a great city, but I wanted to come back to California. And I, you know, I have a lot of engineering background. I really wanted to round out my experience with some of the financial side, the entrepreneurship side. And the big thing about business school is a network. You get it, you know, if it weren't for business school, I wouldn't have gotten to meet someone like yourself or a lot of the other people I've been able to contact with. And it's definitely one of those decisions where you probably don't need it. And it's kind of personally up to you whether or not you want to have it. I think it's a kind of a good insurance policy. And it's also a really good 2 years to kind of find yourself and figure out exactly what you want to do. You know, I had a much broader idea of what I wanted to do prior to business school, and I can promise you what I wrote my applications to get in are completely different from what I actually want to do now. So that was a really good value for me. It's just kind of taking 2 years to learn about all the different industries, have an internship here, meet so many successful entrepreneurs, and kind of find myself.
Cool.
And for me, it was kind of the same. So I went for law school, as in Brazil, it's undergrad, it's not a master degree. So, and I founded my company while I was in college. So actually I had no business experience. I learned everything on my own. Later on, I joined the family business and was a much larger company. And then you kind of realize that you need some business skills to be able to grow the business, to expand, to have new strategic decisions and to be successful. And at the same time, this is my first time living abroad. So it's just a new perspective on everything. You just learn about your culture, your country when you're living in somewhere else. So that's about it. Learn more about business, meet a lot of people, and learn more about my culture, my country, and Brazil in general. So that's super valuable experience.
Yeah. So I didn't go to school in Los Angeles. I went to school in San Diego, and I wish that I would have thought about where I was going to end up. Because I would have done things a little bit differently. I would have like probably gone to school in LA because I knew I would always end up back in LA. Mm-hmm. But I developed a network in San Diego, and then I moved immediately back to LA. And I had to like start from scratch, which is also, it's fine. But I wish during those years that I was like, you know, like in LA and friendless and I didn't know anyone.
Yeah.
During those years, I was like, oh, what was I thinking? Like I should have gone to school in LA, but it all ends up all right. Anyways. Yeah, go ahead.
We are here to learn more about you as well. Yeah. Can you share a little bit about your background and how was your entrepreneur path?
Yeah, so about 11 years ago, our business started as an experiment. It was one day my mom was like, hey, do you guys want to start a business? And my brother and I said, yeah, sure. And then we decided we are going to go into the wine industry. But the technology that we wanted to implement was like 10 years out, and we had already like gotten our LLC name and paid for it. And so we were like, all right, what do we do now? Uh-huh. And we are all just kind of getting into coffee around that time.
Okay.
Like my mom had never really was a coffee drinker. My brother and I weren't coffee drinkers. except for the occasional like sweet beverage from Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And I did a report in school. So when I was in high school, I took college courses.
So you were in high school trying to create a wine company when you can't even drink?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, it was more of a, it wasn't a wine company. It was a regulate, it was to regulate the temperature of wine during transportation.
Okay.
Okay.
Because, you know, when wine reaches a certain temperature, it's, yeah. Yeah. And during transportation, there's no, you don't really know what's happening to the wine, especially if it's being shipped from overseas. It could be in a like container that's under a ship that's not
the Panama Canal.
Yeah. So that was the idea behind that. And then we got into coffee and decided to start selling coffee machines, super automatic espresso machines online. And then
Were you guys building the machines or no? Just
important? No. We were reselling. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was an online business, and we worked on it. My brother and I worked on it through college, and it was actually made money.
Nice, congrats!
So we're like, what? Then when we got out of so I went to school for international business with an emphasis in supply chain management. I was really interested in working abroad and experiencing different cultures, and what international business was to me was a study of different cultures, which was really cool. And then what supply chain management was, which I don't know why I was so interested in it, but as soon as I heard it, I was like, yes, like that is for me. But it ended up being like all math.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm not a numbers person.
Okay.
I'm not a math person. So I was like, what was I thinking?
Like, yeah, it's but all math.
It's all math. Operations, yeah. So I got through that.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Good job.
I did an internship in China because I was really interested in supply chain, and I was like, well, I want to go to the source.
Right.
And so studying supply chain allowed me to get a job or an internship at an all Chinese company who'd never hired a foreigner before. Wow. Everybody spoke Chinese. I was the only English speaking person. But because of my background in school, they wanted to hire me or bring me on. And then, so I did that. I learned a lot. I learned a whole lot in China. Then I came back and my brother and I were like, we're looking at each other. We're like, do you want to work for anybody? And I was like, no. And it was also like the middle, kind of like the middle of the recession. No one who graduated during our time, my brother and I are only a year apart. Uh-huh. No one was getting jobs.
Yeah.
So we were like, okay, this business that we didn't know what we were doing with, mm-hmm. it like did okay. So yeah. Want to do something and do it better. Something else.
Right.
And so that's when we started Barista Lab in 2010. And then we did a lot of things around that time. We started Barista Lab. I opened our first Amazon store.
Okay.
And we also started, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the LA coffee company called Handsome Coffee Roasters.
Yeah, I've seen their website.
So the three like main guys in LA from Intelligentsia. One was a barista, world barista champion, decided to start their own coffee roastery. And so my brother and I were like, that would be really cool to just be a part of that and to like learn about opening a coffee store and about coffee production and roasting. And, so also around that time we decided to work at Handsome Coffee. And then in 2013 we both left Handsome Coffee and started Outpost, which is our cold brew coffee company. And we worked on that for about 2 years.
Wow. Okay.
So we were in we had gotten into some stores. So like Gelson's took on our product.
Nice.
We had about, we were exporting to Norway.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
We got a lot of, how did that happen? We got a lot of press for our label, actually.
Okay. I've seen it. It looks really cool.
So we were, we're huge fans of really good coffee.
Yep.
And we wanted to bring, originally Outpost started as we wanted to make a store. We wanted to do a roaster. We wanted to roast coffee,
mm-hmm.
Brew coffee, and like just be a sort of like a multi-purpose space too. Like maybe do a pop-up shop. Mm-hmm. We had like these big dreams of doing a coffee shop, but, and we wanted to bring good coffee to places that didn't have it.
Right.
And rent in LA is very expensive.
Yeah. We're aware. we're all too aware being in school and having to live here.
Yeah. So we're like, okay, we're the location that we want, and that's not it. We got all like these no's. Basically, and we're like, what else can we do? So we were like, oh, let's bottle cold brew. And my brother and I are like super minimalists.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm less of a minimalist now than I was back in 2013. But at the time, I like had one pair of pants and I would go camping like every weekend. Like that's what I like to do. Like every single weekend.
That's awesome.
And so we were like, okay, I think what we really want to focus on is what's in the bottle. Because okay. That is what is the most unique part mm-hmm. of our coffee. It's like the best cold brew that you could ever get. And we can bring it anywhere. We can ship it to Norway. That's not what we were thinking at the time. But like, we can.
And you did.
And we did. So when we were working with a designer, I was like, let's just make it like super basic. Let's not focus on the like making crazy labels. Plus it's really expensive to like print and color.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge fan of like just black and white, make it clean, very utilitarian, almost going back to generic brands.
Mm-hmm.
But having the product be like in the bottle, what's in the bottle, really good. And so that's how we decided. We had already decided on our name, kind of like how we had already decided on our name back in 2007 when we started our first business. We decided on Outpost because we wanted people to discover our shop. Almost like they stumble upon it or okay. they discover. So it's like an outpost hidden somewhere.
Right.
Okay. So that was our name. And we decided that while creating the labels for the cold brew, we were like, well, Outpost is cool, but what it really is it's just cold brew. And so that's kind of how it became the focus of the label. It's like cold brew, really big,
mm-hmm.
like a generic brand would be,
mm-hmm.
like milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this is milk.
Yeah.
There's nothing else in it. It's just coffee and water. But so cold brew, coffee and water, and then Outpost was like a little tiny like thing. Anyways, our label ended up being like featured on design blogs and winning awards.
Nice.
I want to say even like it got featured in like BevNet.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I want to say the people in because our design was so Scandinavian that people from Norway were like, oh, hey, like, can we get some of that?
Sure, why not?
So we were like shipping pallets of cold brew to Norway.
Wow.
And then we also got an account in LA and San Francisco. I think they had, I don't know, maybe, I'm not sure how many stores they had. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a distributor because of them up in San Francisco.
So it sounds like you guys actually got quite a good ways away on the cold brew business.
We did. Yeah. And we were actually, kegging cold brew and selling to WeWorks for a little bit.
I wish they still had some.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about how, so you guys, you and your brother came up with the idea, Outpost Cold Brew. You went ahead, worked with the designer. You found this awesome design. Can you tell me about how you guys started like brewing the cold brew? I imagine you were in a commercial kitchen. Was it just you and your brother? Or did you guys hire someone? How did that all unfold?
So to start, oh, wow, this is, I haven't thought about this in a while. So the start of this was, we couldn't open a shop. Mm-hmm. That was a no-go. And then we started seeing bottles of cold brew pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Stumptown was the first. Yeah. Are you guys familiar with
the
brand?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I love it.
So back in the day, Stumptown was like the only cold brew on the shelves. And they were not as, it wasn't as readily available as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think four people, me, my brother, and two other people from Handsome Coffee,
okay,
all left around the same time. And we were going to start like a shop, a roaster retail.
Okay.
And we would have meetings like every week and assign each other tasks. And, then we would come back and meet and like tell each other what we learned.
Right.
Probably very similar to what you guys are doing with your project.
100%. Yeah. There's five of us and we meet every week or twice a week and we kind of ungroup and, tell everyone what we learned, and, we'll be letting everyone know what we learned today for sure.
Yeah.
So one of our friends, became the manager at Egg Slut. Do you know Egg Slut?
Mm-hmm. Love it.
And so he and my brother were like, oh, like it'd be really cool to bottle cold brew and then we could like sell it to Egg Slut. Because, and I'm not sure like how this conversation happened. I wasn't 100% a part of it. I was kind of like, it's kind of like, man, I don't really feel like bottling cold brew. Like that does not sound like fun to me.
Yeah.
I just worked my way up in Handsome Coffee from literally like roasting all night and bagging coffee and distributing it. Like that does not, I don't know. That doesn't sound like fun, but I'm also the kind of person that like, I'm like a super team player. So at the same time I was like, all right, like, let's just do it. Like, fine. I'll work.
Right.
Like I like to work. And so I think my brother and Justin came up with this idea. He's the other guy from Handsome. And so we did a test run. We brewed some cold brew.
In your kitchen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brewed some cold brew. We bought some bottles, like the cheapest bottles. We went with like the cheapest bottle caps. They're the 12 ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they're different. So what we found out about bottling,
mm-hmm,
are you go and you look at the shelves, and maybe you guys have already done this, but when you go and you look and you're like, oh, these bottles are really cool. A lot of them are custom made.
Yeah.
And if you want to be different, like if you want to look different on the shelves, then yeah, it's really expensive. And nobody was doing beer bottles.
Okay.
And so we're like, we'll just do beer bottles. And plus it's like kind of cool.
Oh yeah.
So that's how our bottles came to be. But have you guys gotten into this where you're like looking, either deciding between plastic or glass
or cans,
or pasteurizing or not, or any of that?
Yeah. We're doing a lot of that analysis right now. We're finding out that plastic isn't going to work so well if you're worried about the flavor. Cans are definitely the cheapest, and bottles get exceedingly expensive, especially if you want them to look good.
Yeah. So, we just brewed some cold brew in our, like, in our kitchen, and made our first, like, batches. And then we found out that we had to have like a commercial kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so we evaluated all the different types of spaces, uh-huh. like just doing our own, getting our own facility. Mm-hmm. We looked at commercial kitchens around Los Angeles area. We looked at sharing with a restaurant. Mm-hmm. We ended up over at Chef's Kitchen, I think, in Pasadena.
Okay.
Because this is actually all very lucky how it happened, because Justin, who is a part of Outpost, was a manager at Eggslut. Mm-hmm. He brought on our cold brew, no problem. Eggslut gets like thousands of people
a day. Yeah.
And all of those people love to take pictures and post on Instagram. And so we would see our cold brew pop up on their Instagram
all the time.
Yeah.
And that's how a lot of people would find our brand, actually. And so I would say, if you guys are wanting to, that might be like a good route. But first, okay, so let me finish the answer to your question.
Okay.
And then we can kind of get into like strategy. So we would bring people on to bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Bottling is a very big task. Brewing and bottling is like a very, like we had to like mentally and emotionally ramp up for bottling days. They were long and hard.
Yeah.
They were rough, like super rough. I don't know. Like, there might be an easier way of doing it now. Sometimes I'll see like cold brew things pop up somewhere, like uh-huh. on the internet. Mm-hmm. And there's more devices. There's more, you guys have probably found them by now,
mm-hmm.
but there's easier ways. When we were doing it, we were like forging a path through, like, okay. we were pioneers. Mm-hmm. It felt like.
I love it.
Especially because we were bootstrapping.
Yeah.
Who in the world bootstraps a beverage company?
Yeah.
Like, so when we first started this path that we started on, oh, we'll do this, or let's just bottle. Let's just sell to Eggslut. They went through like, I would say like maybe, how many cases were we dropping off for them? I don't know, like maybe like half a pallet a week.
Wow.
Oh, it's a lot.
And so just that one customer.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, like all these little baby steps that we took to get to where we were.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I was like emailing people, trying to get more press, using my connections. It's almost like you're walking through a very deep valley at this point, right?
Okay.
And the walls on the side of this valley are really, really high. And the more that we walked into this valley, the more clear it got, the more clear our position got.
Mm-hmm.
And we were no longer just like a couple of kids who wanted to bring cold brew to everywhere that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
We were competing with all of the beverages on the shelves. Like, we are an actual beverage company. And going into this, we weren't like, let's start a beverage company. We are like, let's just bring really great cold brew to, you know, wherever it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we learned, the more we realized like how big this mountain was to climb.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 2000 and?
So, yeah.
2013.
2013 was when you still founded.
Same year.
Yeah.
So
that was when we started. This was around, I feel like when we realized like what we were doing, it was probably like start of 2015.
Okay.
Right. Because that's how I found you guys. You guys were written up in it was like a Eater or LA Times and like the hottest, best cold brew in LA, and it was you guys.
And then that's so cool. That was like our 15 minutes of fame right there. But only in LA. People loved our cold brew. I still get I still get inquiries about people carrying our cold brew.
Do you still make it at home by yourself on the side?
No.
No.
No way.
No.
Yeah, no. No.
Done. Like that.
Bad memories.
No, no, not really. I wrote, so I was interviewed recently by an online publication, and one of the questions was like, has it been smooth sailing? Has your entrepreneurship journey been smooth sailing? And I was like, dude, smooth roads? Like, what are those?
Yeah.
And then my comment after that was like, you can either embrace every situation with like an open mind and an open heart and like positively, or uh-huh. you can cringe at every bump in the road.
Right.
And I was like, I used to be a cringer. Like, I'm not anymore, but I really used to be a cringer. And it's more like the friction or whatever that I had in the beginning was just because that's how I was. And it didn't have to be like that. So knowing like who you are and where you may find those road bumps and how you might deal with them
right.
is like a good to put into your own business analysis. Like is this going to be viable or not?
Absolutely. So I was saying before, I like worked for massive corporations prior to business school, and I've been working at a startup this summer and going on through the school year, and it's crazy, like going from like the steady, steadfast, like ocean liner, going straight to a really small ship in a big ocean. And it definitely takes a different constitution, and you have to be a lot more comfortable with being open-minded and not scared by every bump.
One thing I was going to say, oh yeah, with where you guys, one thing that we didn't do that we probably should have done, mm-hmm. and when I say should have, I don't really mean should have, because I am like a really strong believer that everything happens the way that it should have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But what we discovered through our research, and by research I mean experience of this cold brew company.
Running the company, yeah.
Yeah, was a lot of people who start beverage companies spend like years researching before actually launching the company.
Wow.
Let's say they're planning on a 10-year, it's going to take 10 years to break through the market.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take 20% of that 10 years and they'll use it just to research.
To understand the customer, the market, the competitors.
Okay. Yeah. But I don't know. I think anything can be done. Like, there's no real way. There's only, like, I don't know. You guys will probably find, like, another way that might work for you. So, but anyways, my question was going to be, there's different strategies based on your different desire of, like, where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, wherever you see your coffee or your cold brew will depend on the route that you take to get there. So there's, I don't remember all like the fancy names for these places, but there's like, I think it's like wholesale. So that would be like something like Costco.
Mm-hmm.
There's health, like health food markets. Mm-hmm. So like Whole Foods, Sprouts, Gelson's, like the top, yeah. like, you know, like pricey kind of markets.
Bristol Farms, yeah.
Yeah, Bristol Farms is in there. There's a regular like grocery stores. I don't know what those are these days. and there's like a bunch of other things.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's restaurants, there's offices, there's all these different categories of where you could like enter the market.
Right.
Different distributors distribute to different places.
Mm-hmm.
Some distributors only distribute certain types of beverages, or some like food distributors won't distribute beverages, some will. It depends on where you kind of go and who you need to talk to. So where do you guys see your brand? Where do you see your cold brew ending up? Where do you want it to be? Who do you want it to go to?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we are still learning and researching that now. But we see ourselves with a premium product. So we're looking at your Whole Foods, Gelson's, Nugget Market, Bristol Farms, that sort of area going forward. And I think similar to you, we want to make just the best cold brew out there. Brands similar to like a Blue Bottle or a Stumptown, you know, brands like that are just genuinely very, very good cold brew. And I think target areas are, you know, areas where it's generally warmer all year in the South. LA obviously would be the kickoff point. If we can, do a proof of concept in this market, I think then you have some ammunition to move on to, you know, Phoenix, Houston, Austin, et cetera, maybe back to New Orleans. But that's kind of what I see. I don't know, Guy, if you want to add anything.
No, yeah, I think we're aligned on that. But something that we really care about is health. So that's something that we have been studying a lot, and there are a lot of new cool beverages out there that it's health is the main thing going on, and we are studying a lot. Justin is one of our team members. He's kind of a specialist on that field. So we are trying to combine cold brew and health. So instead of having a Red Bull or something like that, why not have something that's natural, like high quality, that brings you the energy that you need, but at the same time, it's really healthy. So that's something that we really care and that we are studying right now.
We're kind of also health nuts. Like my brother and I are like really particular about things, and we wanted to make a cold brew that could be consumed without having to add anything to it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, it gave you like that energy boost, but it was also like really soft and like pleasant and easy to drink. And a lot of people, who we interacted with. So we did a lot of like festivals and fairs and farmers markets and food shows. And a lot of the people that we interacted with were like, they liked it without adding anything to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
We just learned that only 30% of people like their like cold brew coffee black. The other 70% want cream and sugar in there. But I think if you have a really top quality product like that, I think a lot more than 30% would be interested in it. I just don't know if they've all been exposed to the Outpost cold brew type coffee.
Yeah. So what other questions do you guys have? Like, where are you guys in your project right now? Oh, also another question before I forget. Yeah. I wanted to ask you guys this in the beginning. There's two questions here. One is, what is your layout or your required info for your thesis? Like, what do you need to display knowledge of? What do you need to like decide on? What's the requirements, if you had to tell me, just so I know how to kind of like.
So help. The requirements, first, there is a piece of primary and secondary research. So something like we are doing right now, talk to as many people as possible, understand the business, the challenges, the landscape, the competition. So all of that. But essentially, you're building a business plan to help you to decide whether to move forward with this company or not. So by the end of this program, we have kind of a pitch day, and then you can go pitch your company, talk about what you're developing, your business plan, and what you're trying to accomplish. Or a lot of people just go up there and say, hey, I was into, I don't know, X company, and I did a lot of research, and I talked to this many people, and actually I realized that it's just not a thing anymore, like, or we need a lot of cash that I don't have, or the market saturated. So there are two options. Of course, everyone is shooting for the first one. You want to go up there, pitch your idea, try to raise some funds, or just build some knowledge on your company. But essentially, is a paper that will help you to come up to whether to go forward or not.
Yeah, I think to summarize, you know, this is a really unique kind of opportunity that we're given. We have a lot of resources and support from UCLA to go ahead and build our own company. The other really fun part of this is that when you reach out to someone and say, hey, I'm a student, can you teach me something, or can you talk to me, you get access to speak to a lot more people than probably generally would even look at your email.
Yeah, I still use that one sometimes.
Yeah, that's the best one in the book. I hope my student email sticks around for a while. But, you know, we're all very serious about becoming entrepreneurs. Yeah. And we did a lot of research on the market. We were looking at alcohol first, and then we kind of realized, you know, health is something we actually all relate to. Alcohol sales are actually decreasing, and but fizzy water, just bottled water in general, sales are going crazy. Like, look at LaCroix. So we saw that's something that we also align with, and that's kind of why we settled on cold brew coffee. And I think, you know, for us, we want to understand if we could actually create this business. We're making a huge business plan where we want to really understand a lot about the customers who buys the coffee, what price point they're willing to take. Do they want MCT oil in their coffee? Do they want maca in their coffee? Do they want, you know, XYZ butter? All sorts of interesting things like that. And we've run some surveys ourselves. And, you know, we try and talk to as many customers as we can. Go to like Bulletproof Coffee in Venice and kind of sit out there and just kind of see who goes in the door. But kind of, I think for us, it'd be really helpful to understand the demographics more and kind of what people want. And at the same time, we're trying to find the next big thing. You know, cold brew coffee is definitely taken off and it's on a steep trajectory. We're wondering maybe if there's some marriage between that and something else which has yet to take off and kind of be in a, maybe one of the first people to the market in that area as well.
I think you're on a good track there, because when we first started, Stumptown was our only competitor. Mm-hmm. But Stumptown wasn't our only competitor.
Right.
Because there were
a lot of products.
There were a lot of products that were not in the same refrigerated section. Mm-hmm. That were competitors.
Okay.
So a lot of the cold brew that you see on the shelves does not need to be refrigerated. But like Stumptown's product and our product were non-pasteurized. They were raw. Mm-hmm. And so they did need to be refrigerated. And depending on refrigeration or non-refrigeration, getting into stores is like a whole other.
Yeah.
That's why I asked, like, where do you guys want to end up?
Yeah.
Because
shelf space.
But also if your product has to be refrigerated, there's even more limited shelf space in the refrigeration section. But yeah, there's like high brew. I think there was like a Bob Marley.
Mm-hmm.
These are all products that we would never buy. But we discovered, because we had a cold brew coffee company, and we discovered that they were competitors and that there were people already making cold brew coffee. Chameleon was a huge one too.
Yeah.
And then other people entered the market, like Blue Bottle, and then, you know, Califia Farms, like started making their cold brew almond milk, and then kind of like everybody flooded the shelves.
But you were walking us through your path, and then you're saying about the valley, like with really high walls and a lot of competition going on that you guys were not expecting. And what happened after?
I think we're kind of, so I think we did pretty well for bootstrapping a beverage company.
Not.
But here's what happened. We weren't paying ourselves from the cold brew, from the startup.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And working a lot.
We're working like really hard. So if we were going to ever hire somebody to do the work that we are doing, we wouldn't make any money.
Right.
And there came a point where we either went to a beverage manufacturer and had them bottling our cold brew.
Okay.
Or pretty much stop bottling. But when you go to a beverage manufacturer and you talk to them, there's a whole other list of things that you need to take into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Crazy minimums.
Yeah. Huge minimums. And that's not even the only thing. There's what types of things are we discovering? There's something with a bottle. So I think we're going to have to move to plastic.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. So then, you know, that at that point, there's an entire brand change if you're moving from bottle to plastic. Or we just get our own bottling line and revamp our bottling line. So there's a lot of different options that we could do, but it all came down to money, basically.
Yeah.
We weren't making enough money to, we didn't want to be bottling our own cold brew for forever. And part of what you want to do as an entrepreneur is keep handing off your work to someone so you can keep building or do something else.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't keep bottling your own cold brew for forever, right?
And what about raising funds? Did you guys try to do so? Was something considered or not?
Yeah, we thought about it. I think we could have. It would have been, we decided that if we were going to raise funds, it would have been family friends, but we're just not, I don't know. I don't think we wanted to be in the beverage business forever or for much longer. I remember what happened was around this time that this happened, the story I'm about to tell you was when we were I think we got to call it quits. And at some point in your journey, entrepreneur journey, you have to kind of know when to call it quits and when to keep pushing on. And we are at about break even, not including time. Mm-hmm. WeWork was one of our clients. And one day, the guy who had, and we actually did, we've always been really into customer service and taking care of people and developing relationships. Part of what has helped our first business that's still running are these relationships that have been built on trust. And I don't know, we've always just done what's right. And so one day WeWork called us and they're like, hey, I really wanted to go with this. They're like, hey, okay, if you can get a keg set up within 24 hours, you will be our vendor.
Wow.
We'll be right there. And so we are set up and in their, we are set up and in their office. And when we were talking to them, they're like, yeah, you know, the other company we're working with, we're just being super slow. They dropped the ball a few times. And that's why we went out to, that's why we contacted you guys. And thank you for pulling through for us. And so this was their first keg setup that we had ever done. And, when with a refrigerator and with the kegs and learning how to, learning how to do the nitro thing overnight and getting all the equipment and filling the kegs and then hooking it up, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're just oh, we have this fridge, it should be good to be set up. And then my brother got there and he's like, oh man, we're gonna need a lot of stuff here. So anyways, we got the keg up and running and then we were delivering to multiple LA locations and we were kind of wow, this is pretty huge. Because when you deliver kegs, it really affects your profit margin.
Yeah.
Because with bottles, with individual bottles, you're paying for the bottle and the coffee and the labor and all that for each individual thing. But when you fill up a keg, it's like you get 80 servings in this like keg.
Right.
And you have to deliver it one time or like maybe once a week.
Yeah.
And it's just like better for cost and labor and everything. So we're like, if we could get the keg business up and running, then we're going to be... this is like really what happened, like what was the determining factor,
right? Okay.
In keeping going with our cold brew company or ending it. So we are going to go into just kegging. And, during this time I was trying to sell kegs to more restaurants.
Okay.
So we had... I think we had like Egg Slut was going to switch to keg, I think. And we were going to like convert a lot of our customers to kegs instead of like, you know, like Health Aid has kegs in like grocery stores and stuff, right? And stuff. Yeah. And so we're like, let's, you know, like let's do that. And so the issue with converting kegs to coffee, like in restaurants and stuff, is they have to switch out a beer line. They have to like pull one of their beers and make it a coffee line.
Right.
And you can't have nitrogen. You can't push it with CO2. You have to push it with nitrogen.
Okay.
Push the coffee with nitrogen. So then you have to have two different gas lines. And so it's a little bit complicated, but not impossible because some restaurants do it. Or they just get a standalone keg fridge, right?
Yeah.
So there are options. I was talking to some pretty big accounts. One was like Simsies. Another one was like Tender Greens. And this would have like going this direction would have changed our company. And then one day we get a call from WeWork and they're like, hey, I'm really sorry, but the people like the higher ups in New York signed a contract and every single WeWork has that's going to carry cold brew has to carry Stumptown.
Ooh.
So we were like, shit.
Brutal.
And that was it. That, and we were like, well, what can we do? Like we, you know, like can you talk to us on price or like, there's like a lot of things that we can do. They're like, sorry, it came from, the orders came from HQ. And so we were like, damn, we don't know anybody in New York. And then also around the same time, the people that the restaurants that I was talking to, they were like, I think they ended up going with Stumptown, or they already had Stumptown, but they were trying to get better pricing from us or maybe use us to get better pricing from Stumptown. So it started like getting really, it started coming down to like things that a small company can't really fight for.
Right.
And so, or like, you know, the people at the investors at Stumptown have connections that we don't have, or, you know, like kind of came down to things that like, we couldn't compete on. And then at that point we were like, all right, so we can't keep bottling because it doesn't make sense. Even if we were to raise money, it doesn't make sense because our coffee cost is not like we are using really high quality coffee. A lot of people don't use high quality coffee. You could probably taste the difference. And we didn't want to budge like on quality.
Right.
So yeah, it came down to that. And we were just like, all right, we got to move on. Like we've invested a lot of time. We've learned a lot. We've like tried our hardest and we did like, you know, we did pretty well.
Yeah.
I think like over 100 accounts, you know, like with all the design stuff, we're exporting to Norway. Yeah. We're in San Francisco.
Break even.
We're at break even.
Yeah.
Not including time, but it's kind of crazy. There was, we brought on like one person every bottling day, actually two people. And then other than that, it was just two other people. It was me and my brother who were doing like the distributing and the selling and So we had a pretty small team. Actually, we did get a lot of help. So one thing that really helped us, I don't know if you guys have someone in sales, but we have a family friend who used to sell, one, he used to sell alcohol, but he also helped break Red Bull into the United States.
Wow.
And so he kind of was like a mentor for us, and especially for me. And on my big like sales calls, he would come with me.
Oh, cool.
And he would say like, oh, you need to, like if you're in a restaurant, we can launch, like, let's get all the servers together. Let's launch a contest that lasts for a week, have them sell as much cold brew as possible. So he helped us come up with ideas and stuff like that. So if you guys are going, I don't know what you decide on going on, but make a list of all of your connections and see if you have anyone who's been in like beverage sales.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or someone else. My boyfriend at the time, his dad was selling, he may still be selling, this refrigerated pasta. So we were in the same category. And so he would connect me with
a lot of people.
With people, yeah.
Very cool.
So just like make a list of your connections. And when you talk to people, ask them who they're connected to. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, what's your background? Like, do you know anyone in sales?
Right.
What you're going to need is like, what are all your specialties?
We have a mix. Like the team has different skills, but we have people with operations. We do have some sales. We do have a lot of finance background as well, entrepreneurship. So it's a balanced team. We might not have at this point so many connections in the industry, but I'm pretty sure that we can put together a list of all of our connections and start making calls and getting people excited and as advisors or mentors. And the school as well, UCLA Anderson, in that sense, it's quite amazing because you can get access to a lot of people. We do have some advisors in the food industry as well that they're helping us. So yes, I think we have a balanced team. And we do have access to a lot of connections that we definitely should follow your advice and take advantage of all of that.
Yeah. And then your finance, whoever's like in your finance, have them run all the numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you guys already have maybe like a spreadsheet or something going, but get a spreadsheet going, put in all of the numbers for everything.
Right.
Again, like if you're even down to like the box, because what happened when we got into stores is we started with case packs of 24 because beer bottles come in cases of 24 and stores wanted cases of 12. And to get into a store, you want to do whatever they want.
Right. Exactly.
Because they're basically giving you space. They're making space for you. You do whatever they want. But what's also really good about 12 packs opposed to 24 packs is it looks like you move more product.
Okay.
So it's not all bad, but you have to buy, like if you have to buy the boxes and that costs money. Right, so
sure.
Like all of the little things, one person on our team. So we brought someone on, a friend of a friend, in 2013, and he pretty much ran our business, our other business, while we were doing the cold brew stuff. And he would come and help us whenever we needed help with the cold brew. But he is like our numbers guy. He ran everything. He told us how much coffee we needed and how much water to brew cold brew the way that we wanted it to be brewed.
Right.
He told us, like, we gave him all the numbers. He told us what our costs were. He would enter all of our costs as soon as, like, he was our numbers guy. He still is our numbers guy. But you need somebody like very particular about things who's going to like keep track of all of the numbers. So when we were shipping pallets, sometimes it would cost us $50 and sometimes it would cost us like $100. And so with every pallet shipment, the cost is changing, we needed to record like how much mm-hmm. it was changing so we could get like our average cost.
Yeah.
So numbers are pretty big. My brother and I both aren't really like detailed numbers people. We're more like, we're both like bigger picture. So it's really mm-hmm. good to have somebody on our team that's detail oriented. We're kind of like, no, let's just go, let's do it.
we're going to figure out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. What else do you guys need to know? You said customer demographics. Our cold brew was the same price as Stumptown.
Okay.
Another thing that happens when you get into stores is... You're required to advertise. Mm-hmm. So you have to, if it's like a food or a beverage, you have to come up with before the store accepts you, you have to come up with a promotion calendar. And it comes out of your pocket. But the store advertises it for you. They put it in their ads, their magazines. This may be too much information. I don't know. So I assembled a demo team of girls who would like go out and demo for me. And then we would run sales during these demos.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And what's funny is every time we ran a sale, Stumptown was also running a sale. So they found out somehow when our promotions were.
Right, right.
And they would just promote at the same time. So I'm not sure if that's a store thing. Like, I don't know if the stores would be like, hey, like Outpost is running a promotion. You guys might want to run a promotion at the same time. Yeah. They had someone like on the inside who was doing that. But the idea is if you're running promotions, you're selling all of the product and you're even like allowing people who usually buy Stumptown to buy your product and try it because it's at a less expensive price. But... yeah, somehow they knew whenever we were running promotions and they would just run a promotion at the same time. So it gets like pretty competitive. And then you also have to be careful because sometimes people will only buy your product when it's on sale.
Exactly.
So then do you have to like keep running promotions? Depends on the store.
Right.
Like maybe at a Vons, that might be true. But at a Whole Foods, maybe people don't really care about price, obviously, if they're shopping at Whole Foods,
yeah.
Right? So, there's a lot of things to take into consideration when you start getting into like where your product is going to be. But is there anything else I can help you with in terms of like startup process or like
what's
direction?
Next for you?
What's next? So right now I'm working on, after Outpost, I had to decompress.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a long ride.
It was a long, hard road. There you go with the long and hard again. it was a long road, and it was also kind of like that was the first time we decided to like stop, end a business basically, yeah. And we had started two before that, and so it was kind of like a. Like, whoa, like what happened over the past couple of years? What am I doing with my life? Like, I kind of had a little bit of a, like, what am I doing? And yeah. Also an opportunity to do something totally new.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And my brother ended up going into coding. So okay. Now he's a software programmer. He completely changed careers.
Totally.
But yeah. I know he was going through the same thing that I was going through because both of us kind of disappeared for a few months. We like stopped going into the office. I found myself like running on the beach in like the middle of the afternoon. Like I didn't do a whole lot of anything except for decompress for like months. And you could even say that it, for me, like, I think my brother got up and moving before I did. Mm-hmm. He, like, I think we ended Outpost in November. Okay. By March, he was, like, already in, like, back in school. And I think that rest of the year I was like, okay, like what do I need to do? Because the business that we had started back in 2010 was like kind of on autopilot. Mm-hmm. Tony was taking care of it. And this was like an opportunity to like, you know, figure out what I really wanted to do. So it took me a while. I'm still working on being more decisive.
Yeah.
Like, but okay. So what I'm doing now is, so our company, I'd rebranded our first company. We don't sell super automatic espresso machines anymore.
Right.
So I rebranded our first company over the past 2 years and it's called Posh Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm doing is consulting for, so what our company does, it manages and consults for brands that sell on third-party platforms.
Like,
so
like Amazon.
Yeah. Amazon is the number one third-party platform. And we have a handful of clients and my job is basically marketing. That's what I do. Okay. I develop relationships. I give speeches. I give lectures. I develop programs for companies who want to use our services. And by that, I mean like companies who already have a team who need to be taught how to use the platform.
Okay.
But yeah, I live about a third of my time in Australia.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Amazon Australia just launched in December.
Brazil as well.
And
you might live there.
Maybe I'll go over to Brazil. We'll have to keep in touch so you tell me where to go. But yeah, in August was my first trip to Australia and Amazon launched in December. And next month I have 11 workshops and lectures scheduled. Wow. In May, I'm speaking at a online retail conference. So that's cool. So we have clients.
Yeah.
But I love, I don't know, like I'm like my heart is in connecting with people and education. So yeah. when you called me, I was like, dude, let's just meet up and like have a chat. Like to me that's more fun than, you know, like writing you an email or something. Although I do have a lot of fun writing. I write a lot. So yeah, that's what I do.
Cool.
Now, awesome. And what's next? I don't know. Like I have really big dreams.
Okay.
That I'm trying to spend more energy walking into. So yeah, I don't know. Just like I like traveling and helping people. So probably that, I don't know. Yeah.
Awesome.
Do you guys like, I don't know. I feel like, do you guys learn anything?
Oh, yeah, I can.
Yeah.
We learn a lot.
I think, go ahead.
Please go.
No, I think it was really interesting, and I really appreciate your honesty about, you know, when you're talking about walking through the valley. You know, I think that's a really unique position to be in, and I think, you know, from what we've found, we've only talked to the people who, you know, ended up being, you know, wildly successful in cold brew or mostly in entrepreneurship in general. And that's a really, you know, interesting insight. And like, I really appreciated you walking us through the, you know, how you guys made that decision. And, you know, that's a tough one to make. But I think, like you said it yourself, like, you know, part of being entrepreneurs, you need to know when to kind of throw in the towel a little bit. And I don't think that's something that, you know, I've focused or learned as much about. And I really appreciate that. Also, I mean, it's just really inspiring, you know, to hear your story about just deciding to build a cold brew company kind of out of the blue, like just with a couple of friends, just kind of what we're looking at. And I appreciate you just taking the time to go over that with us.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It was a super interesting journey. And when we are right now, like thinking about, okay, let's move ahead. Let's go forward with this. That's the kind of stories that you want to learn about. Like the successes is all around. That's what people talk about. But actually what's going on the backstage and all the hustle and all the challenges, that's what we really want to learn. So it was super helpful. Thank you so much for being so honest and to sharing your story. And hope all the success in your journey. And actually, Brazil is a thing. Like, Amazon just got there, so it might be a market as well.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's exciting for me.
Yeah.
So I would say, just to recap, figure out where you want to end up.
Yeah.
I like how you're thinking of, like, what does the market need? Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good question to consider before launching a product. And then, yeah, like, the BevNet has a lot of, I don't know, BevNet comes out with a lot of materials and research and market demographics and information. So that's, like, a pretty good information source for beverages. I would say, if you're going to go for the lowest cost possible with keeping your, like, the quality that you want.
Yeah.
And even use your limitations as a, like, whether they be money or amount of people on your team or having no connections, like, use that as a, like, all you use all of your limitations as opportunities to, it's almost like use them as a game almost.
Okay.
Like, view them not as limitations, but as places where you could be strong. Because I think that's where you will find your strengths, not your weaknesses. You know what I mean? No.
I think so. No, I think I get it.
For example, I'll give you an example from my own story. So, not wanting to spend the money on a custom bottle, but going with beer bottles because they were cheap.
Right.
Or even, like, our design. We didn't have a clear idea of who we were. Mm-hmm. So we made it as basic as possible. And that became our personality.
Right.
That became our story. So instead of being like, oh man, like, we really need to have a brand identity.
Yeah.
And let's spend some time figuring that out. No. Let's use our non-identity to be an identity. That's what I mean by using your limitations as opportunities and strengths. And going with the flow. Like, don't, mm-hmm. Like, that's another example of going with the flow. Like, don't spend too much energy or too much time on things that don't matter that much. You can make all negatives or all negative aspects into the positive. Just depends on what your perspective is and how you use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there were no black and white labels on the shelf. Ours was the only one, and it always stood out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody uses color. Everybody uses, you know, like, mascots or shapes.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, not our style, or at least it wasn't. Mainly because we were like, we don't know what defines us, but we can't spend time. Like, we just got to make it clean and legible, and it needs to be, like, you know, easily understood. I mean, a lot. I would say, like, a lot of my detailed advice would have to do with, like, where you guys want to end up. Like, whether it be Costco or in restaurants or whatever. But, yeah.
I think we're still trying to figure that out. Yeah. But once we do, it sounds like we'll have to reach back out to you. Maybe do a part two of the podcast.
You guys have any more questions? Anything you want to touch on before we sign off?
Just a general question. So you've been an entrepreneur basically since you started.
Yeah. Right?
What are some of the most important lessons that you've learned along the way, and something you could give to, like, Guy and I?
That's a really big question. It's been 11 years and I've evolved as a person. I'm going to give you answers from my current perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked about, before we started recording, I talked about intent.
Yeah.
So starting with the end in mind and figuring out, like, what you want. That's been a huge lesson for me. That was what I spent, like, a lot of time deciding in that year after we decided to like terminate Outpost. What else? Network, like developing a network is super important. So I would consider myself as just starting a new business, even though I just rebranded our old one. Mm-hmm. But for management and consulting, I've learned that like a network makes a huge difference. And before we, like Outpost kind of proved that, but our businesses before that were very like solo work. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really have to be like that. It could have been more, I don't know, like with developing a network. Also fun. Like, don't forget to have fun. I used to take myself way too seriously. Yeah. And also just, I mean, it's good to plan and to implement new things and always be learning. But, like, you can do that in a really fun way. Like, do it in the way that you enjoy doing it, not in the way that somebody else tells you you have to do it. Mm-hmm. So I think what's really important for learning is like learning in the way that you like to learn. And yeah, so finding like joy through having fun, yeah. Always like keep learning whenever you're stuck. Like, do you guys ever feel stuck?
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
I don't know. Like, I used to experience a lot more friction in my life, but that friction manifested itself as like stuckness. Mm-hmm. And what's helped me with that is like figuring out what it is that's making me feel stuck. Mm-hmm. And then focusing on the like positive part of it. Yeah. I don't know. That's probably
that was a big question to yeah. spring upon you right at the end of the interview like that.
It's a really big question. But
it was good advice. Like, I think.
Yeah.
Important points.
I think
honesty, like I'm a huge, we've had some really tough times, especially in the beginning. And I guess like sticking to your morals, mm-hmm. and like remaining like keeping true and honest. Like, those have been really huge aspects of my journey as an entrepreneur. Never going against what my like internal compass says. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how other people's internal compasses are, but mine's like pretty strong and like not doing anything that's like totally wrong. Yeah, I don't know. Work hard, do work. Some people don't like to work. I'd say if you don't like to work, then entrepreneurship probably not for you.
No.
Like, love to get your hands dirty. And if you don't, like, find out what like one thing that's really helped me this year. And when I say this year, I mean like over the past year, is digging really deep. Like, do you guys ever get bored? Do you ever feel like you want to like stop doing something out of boredom, or mm-hmm. like things are become uninteresting?
Yeah.
So that used to happen to me in my different entrepreneur roles, mm-hmm. of starting like businesses. At some point I'd be like, oh, I'm bored. Like, I want to do something new.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of always doing something new is part of my spirit. But one thing I found this year was to, when that happens, to dig deeper, like dig way deeper.
Okay.
And find things that become interesting within my same like
space.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And also, there's always a way. Like, if you really want to do something, there's always a way to do it. So like, if you're kind of feeling like at the end, here's what I think. Oh, this was actually what I was going to say when you were telling me about your thesis and your project, and uh-huh. either you pitch
for money
or you explain why it didn't work or why yeah. you don't feel like it will work. I really wanted to say, but I didn't want to interrupt. If you can learn everything that you're meant to learn during this phase and write your thesis and it's a bad idea and you still want to do it, then you know it's a good idea. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If at the end of your research, you decide that you don't want to do it, then you probably never did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got
so whatever you, this comes back to intent and decision making. When you set your mind to doing something or your heart or your whole like body into doing it,
yeah,
like nothing's going to stop you. No one's bad experiences, no one's good experiences, no one's tough experiences. You'll just want to do it and you'll do it. And you'll find your own path and you'll find your own way. But if you don't want to do it, then everything that you hear, all your research will shy you away from the decision of doing it. And maybe what's meant to come out of this, to come out of your research or to come out of your school or you writing your thesis is to help you make a better decision as to whether you really want to do this or not.
Mm-hmm. That's a valid point. I think it's about it. You do a lot of work, but essentially we will always be able to find a way. That's entrepreneurship. Otherwise, no one will be starting any kind of business. Every idea, it's tough to implement, and the challenge will be in front of you in any space. But if you have the passion, if you have the energy, I'm with you that you can find a way, and you may pivot, you may partner with someone, but you'll make it happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
It was great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming all the way to the west side. all right. I guess we'll sign up. Oh, is there anything you guys want to say? You want to say to either the audience or maybe you want to plug your chicken coop business again? I'm just kidding. anything? Any last minute requests?
We'll be soon out with a brand, with a product, and keep posted. We will probably send you a sample and maybe even, I don't know, have a second one with our product, and then we have more stories to tell and actually a product to taste.
Cool. I'm excited to learn what you guys decide in a few months.
We'll definitely keep you in the loop.
Yeah, please do. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.